Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Trump's trial begins in earnest. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Nicole Murray, on this Monday, April 22nd. Thanks for joining us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
With the jury now seated, opening statements begin today in Donald Trump's hush money case. So how will he handle campaigning?
A suspected drunk driver outside Detroit crashed into a building hosting a party, killing two kids and injuring several others.
The president of Ukraine is on a thank you tour after lawmakers in Washington approved $60 billion in military aid.
And the millennials who want to retire by age 60 and feel they need $1.6 million to do it.
They're thinking in terms of retiring now. So if they're retiring 25 years from now, you could probably double or triple that figure. And I don't mean to laugh, but right now the millennial gang, God bless them, have amassed on average about $60,000 in retirement savings. So it's a long way from $1.5 million or $3.5 million or whatever many millions of dollars they're going to need.
Dan Divise at USA Today on young adults today having only saved a fraction of what they say they'll need to retire. Ukraine's president is thanking House lawmakers for approving $60 billion in funding for Kyiv as it fights a two-year-old Russian invasion. The money was approved by the lower chamber on Saturday, part of a broader package worth $95 billion that also includes money for Israel and Taiwan. It's now expected to be approved by the Senate tomorrow and then signed by President Biden. Zelensky threw a translator on NBC's Meet the Press.
This support will really strengthen the armed forces of Ukraine. And we will have a chance for victory if Ukraine really gets the weapons system, which we need so much.
But the Wall Street Journal says given Ukraine's dire battlefield position and advances Moscow's forces have made over recent months, the new help is unlikely to dramatically reverse Kyiv's fortunes. Zelensky says that Russian troops are firing 10 artillery shells for every one that his soldiers fire. Another bill, by the way, that's part of that package from Washington could result in a nationwide ban of TikTok. The emotional swings continue between the U.S. and Israel. The New York Times says the United States is considering imposing sanctions on one or more Israeli battalions accused of human rights violations during operations in the occupied West Bank. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Word of the sanctions came after the House approved $26 billion for Israel. The sanctions, if imposed, would not hold up the military aid that was just approved in Congress. That said, Israeli leaders are calling the possibility of the Biden administration's sanctions the peak of absurdity with a moral low. Meanwhile, Palestinians in the West Bank yesterday went on a general strike to protest an Israeli military raid at a refugee camp a day earlier, in which at least 10 people were killed. It's part of a broad economic and security crackdown. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. Since the Hamas terror attacks on Israel last October, hundreds of Palestinians have been killed and detained in raids in the West Bank, which Israeli officials describe as counterterrorism operations against Hamas and other armed groups. A birthday party in southeast Michigan has turned into a horror show. Authorities say a young brother and sister died, and more than a dozen people were injured when a vehicle driven by a suspected drunk driver crashed into the Swan Creek Boat Club. Monroe County Sheriff Troy Goodenough says an 8-year-old girl and her 5-year-old brother died when a 66-year-old woman allegedly crashed into the building at 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon. The boat club is in Berlin Township, 30 miles south of Detroit.
The vehicle struck the north wall of the facility, entering the building, and came to rest approximately 25 feet inside the building, where a young child's birthday party was being held.
The two young siblings were pronounced dead at the scene. 9 other people, 6 adults and 3 children, were transported by helicopter or ambulance to area hospitals with serious or life-threatening injuries. Several more people were taken to area hospitals by private vehicle. The sheriff did not identify the woman driving the car.
Pure opportunity. It's what Michigan is all about. The opportunity to do more. The opportunity for all businesses to reach their full potential. Visit MichiganBusiness.org/radio to discover all the ways the MEDC is helping Michigan thrive.
Glad you're with us. Welcome into Monday. Opening statements begin today in a New York City courtroom for Donald Trump's hush money trial. The final alternate jurors were selected Friday. Meanwhile, the campaign trail for Trump will largely be confined to the corridors of a Manhattan courthouse for the next 6 weeks. But his advisors and allies are preparing ways to attempt to drive coverage on his own terms throughout the proceedings. It's a story by Natalie Allison, national political correspondent at Politico. Natalie, give us the sked.
He is in court Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. So that means Wednesdays are off, the weekends are off. And he is trying to maximize every moment of that. We saw that Monday and Tuesday when he spoke with reporters before and after his trial and throughout the day. And there are pool reporters stationed in the hallway in that inside of that Manhattan courthouse. And he's able to make news that way. We're seeing him trying to maximize every moment that he can right now to keep the attention on him.
So, politicians, businesses love what they call free media, right? Where you don't have to purchase time to get on the air. Is this considered free media, or because of the circumstances, like he's in a criminal trial, it doesn't necessarily work to his advantage? Any read on that?
Oh, it's free media. You know, I'm talking with folks around his campaign right now about the fact that they are raising money. Every time someone turns on the TV and they see, something about Trump's trial, they see the camera of him walking into and out of the courtroom. Then they get hit, you know, later in the day with a text message or an email soliciting fundraising. When those texts and emails are targeted to the right people who could be sympathetic, that could result in new donors for Trump. Solely on the grounds that they think that, you know, this is a sham trial, this is so unfair for him, look at this circus. And so, you know, this is earned media, this is free media for him. Sure, some people are going to look at it and say, well, you know, this is a presidential candidate, former president on trial, but for the most part, this media is helping him, and it does translate to money being raised, and it does translate to him being in the conversation, which is ultimately what Donald Trump wants.
We're speaking with Natalie Allison, national political correspondent at Politico. Her story is called "If You Thought a Trial Could Force Trump Off the Campaign Trail, You Thought Wrong." Somebody brought up a good point in your piece about Trump having to be careful and walking that fine line between victim and leader. Explain that.
Yeah, you know, that was coming from a close advisor to Trump and someone who's certainly on his side. And you know, on the one hand, he has benefited from this idea, at least with riling up his base, this idea that the Democratic-controlled federal government, in the case of New York, the Democratic-controlled New York government, is coming out after him unfairly, that they are using this as what they call a political weaponization of the justice system. But, you know, at the same time, there could be a risk for him if people get tired of what they see as whining, or they don't see him as maybe a strong character, if it just seems like he is a constant victim. On the one hand, the victimization, characterization of all of this could be helpful for riling up the base, but ultimately Trump is going to have to appeal to swing voters, to independent voters, to some of these undecided voters, and is going to want to project a lot of strength right now through that.
Yeah. All right, so along those lines then, while he's attending his criminal trial in New York, a blue state, is it beneficial on, say, Wednesdays to be chatting up the media or visiting somewhere because New York's probably not going to vote for him?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, he and some folks in his campaigns have made offhanded comments about how, oh, he actually could win the state of New York this time. That seems really unlikely if you base that on any kind of historic precedent in the last few decades. It doesn't seem like that's going to happen. So yeah, it is smart probably for him to, as much as he can on Wednesday and the weekends, to get out of New York City, to focus on these battleground states. It is sort of surprising that this week he didn't go out of the state on Wednesday. His meeting with the Polish president was supposed to be held in New York. But I think we're going to see him trying to get into some of those swing states in the coming weeks.
Thanks, Natalie. Natalie Allison, national political correspondent at Politico. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Here's Nicole Murray.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The House has approved the $95 billion foreign aid package that offers financial assistance to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. Oklahoma Congressman Tom Cole on CBS.
We have overwhelming bipartisan support for each part of this package. It was structured in a way that it allowed members to both make the points they wanted to make, and frankly, if they needed political cover, do it, but it got done.
The bill heads to the Senate and could be signed into law by President Biden as soon as tomorrow.
Number two.
Two young siblings have been killed and more than a dozen others injured after a vehicle driven by a suspected drunk driver crashed into a children's birthday party in Michigan. Monroe County Sheriff Troy Goodenough.
The 66-year-old female driver of the vehicle who will not be identified at this time, has been taken into police custody for operating while intoxicated, causing death, and she's lodged at the Monroe County Jail.
At least nine victims were transported to local hospitals with life-threatening injuries.
Number three.
Many cars and homes have been damaged after a hailstorm swept through South Carolina. Rock Hill resident Allison Soderberg.
Everything here was just debris, trees down. The neighbors all lost windows. My son's car, the windshield shattered. It was gone.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump canceled his rally in North Carolina because of the weather. The Supreme Court will hear arguments today to consider whether banning homeless people from sleeping outside when no shelter space is available amounts to cruel and unusual punishment. The case stems from Grants Pass, Oregon, which started fining people for sleeping outside to minimize homeless encampments in the city's public parks. Taylor Swift has out-Taylor Swifted herself. Swift's new album, The Tortured Poets Department, has broken a slew of records. It is the most streamed album in a single day. Swift became the most listened to artist in 24 hours, and The Tortured Poets Department became the first album in history to have more than 300 million listens in a day.
Makes it seem like that's the only thing people did all weekend.
Are you a Swifty?
I'm not a Swifty, but I certainly like her and respect her.
That's a Swifty.
At a waste management facility in Morrisville, Pennsylvania, workers load incinerated trash into industrial machinery that separates and sorts metals, then sends them to get hosed down. The reward? Buckets of quarters, dimes, nickels, and pennies. Coins that end up as trash from Oyin Adedoyin, personal finance reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Oyin, what did you find?
I headed in on a rainy Monday morning to this huge facility just outside of New Jersey, where they are dedicating a good amount of resources towards extracting the change that we throw away from the incinerated trash that comes out of landfills.
Man, so is it that we deliberately throw it away, or we lose track of it and it winds up in like the garbage or a landfill somehow? What actually happens?
It's exactly that second point. So think about all of the change that ends up in your car or stuck between the couch cushions in your living room, and then it all gets vacuumed up at some point, right? So that change that's stuck in the vacuum then gets thrown out, and that trash is delivered to landfills all over the country. So, you know, piece by piece, change is being accumulated in the trash. Like, we don't even know that it's happening.
Yeah. So there are actually efforts to extract specifically change?
This company is making an effort too, and they're a waste management solutions company. So they go through trash daily and weekly, and they started to see, you know, huge accumulations of coins in the trash. And actually, when I went there to the site, I could already start to see, before the trash was processed, you know, dirty nickels and dimes and quarters.
Wow. TSA, I would imagine, at the airport has this type of issue where people leave change behind?
Yeah, they also have to file a report every year about how much in loose change they've secured. And some of this is dollars as well, and you know, bills. But most of it is that coins and those, you know, pieces of change that you have to empty out from your pockets when you're going through security.
Yeah. We're speaking with Oyin Adedoyin, personal finance reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her story is called Americans Throw Away Up to $68 Million in Coins Per Year. Here is where it all ends up. So why don't we just say, go to a bank, drop it off and say, I don't know, here's 10 pounds of coins going to have the equivalent of, I don't know, $25 in bills or something.
Many people still do that, but it's getting harder and harder over the last decade or so. You know, many branches have closed their coin counting operations. So places like PNC and Capital One used to have, you know, coin counting features at their physical locations. But due to low customer use and inaccuracies when it comes to actually being able to give you the right amount of money for your change. Oh. They've closed those branches down. And so now most people cash in their change at Coinstar locations and grocery stores and gas stations, or they go directly to their local bank and do it that way.
Explain how some people get creative with this, like that I think it was a couple who made a floor, like out of all the pennies they inherited or something.
It's my favorite thing in the world. This couple, who also happens to have their own interior design company, set out on an adventure over the last year or so to create a floor out of pennies. So they filled their entire 230 square foot entryway out of pennies. I think they use about 65,000 pennies or so. Jeez. At the end of the day. And it ended up being actually a little cheaper than it would have to, you know, put a more common material on the floor.
Thanks, Oyin. Oyin Adedoyin, personal finance reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Hey, it's Gordon Deal. And if you're tired of having the same thing over and over again every meal, do what I did and try Factor. Factor brings you chef-crafted gourmet meals ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from over 35 weekly menu options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Factor's ready-to-eat meals mean no prep and no mess, using the most premium ingredients like truffle butter and filet mignon. Customize your plans to fit your life. Pause or adjust deliveries anytime. And for April, you can celebrate Earth Day all month long. Just look for the badge to find your favorite low-carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/deal50 and use code DEAL50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code DEAL50 at factormeals.com/deal50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Factormeals.com/deal50 and use code DEAL50.
Cutting through the clutter to bring you the people and stories that matter to you. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Hey, thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday, April 22. Gordon Deal with Nicole Murray. Some of our top stories and headlines. Opening statements today in Trump's hush money trial. Two young siblings killed when a suspected drunk driver slammed into a building hosting a party. Shortly after approving aid for Israel, the New York Times says the U.S. floated the idea of sanctions on an Israeli military unit. Nelly Korda has now won a record-tying 5 LPGA tournaments in a row. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees for this year include Ozzy Osbourne, Mary J. Blige, and Kool and the Gang. And the retirement party for a TSA canine. That story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Dell. Now your ideas don't have to wait. Dell Technologies and Intel are pushing what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now. The average millennial is 30-something, an age by which most of us are well-versed in the ups and downs of financial life. It may come as a surprise, then, that the average millennial expects to retire before age 60, a goal not many of us can afford to attain. More about new polling from Dan Divisay, personal finance reporter at USA Today. Dan set this up.
Well, there's always surveys coming out talking about, you know, when do you want to retire? How much money do you need to retire? And it caught my eye that a couple of these, you know, pretty good surveys show the millennial group saying they want to retire early. And by early, I mean, you know, maybe 50-something, maybe 55. And the millennials, of course, are getting up there. They're in their, most of them, I think, in their 30s now or early 40s. So this isn't like asking a 25-year-old who is barely out of college, yeah, you know, oh, I'm going to retire when I'm 30. Okay, mm-hmm. Right. But these are older people, so they should have a sense of how adult life works. And I was surprised that so many of them still think they're going to retire early.
Okay. You mentioned in your story that millennials face a retirement dilemma. What is that?
Well, there's a bit of a paradox here because this gang, who are a lot of them 30-somethings, they want to retire early. They expect retirement will cost maybe $1.5 million, maybe more. And remember, they're thinking in terms of retiring now. So if they're retiring 25 years from now, you could probably double or triple that figure. And I don't mean to laugh, but right now the millennial gang, God bless them, have amassed on average about $60,000 in retirement savings. So it's a long way from $1.5 million or $3.5 million or whatever many millions of dollars they're going to need.
Jeez. Explain your point, too, about how millennials, in this case, just can't catch a break. Who said that?
Oh, well, yeah, a millennial said that, a millennial who's in the investment business. And, you know, this is true of a lot of us. I'm Gen X, and I've been through some of the same stuff. But millennials, a lot of them grew up in households that dealt with the dot-com bust bubble at the end of the 90s. Probably their parents were dealing with it. And that was a huge drop. And then a lot of the same gang were getting into the workforce around the time of the 2008 downturn, which was massive. And let's not forget, the same group also kind of came of age around the time of 9/11, which had all sorts of, you know, trauma connected to it. And then the same group were, I guess, entering their prime earning years, a lot of them, when COVID hit and that downturn. So, yeah, you could argue they've been through a lot, although us older folks have also been through a lot.
All right. We're speaking with Dan Divis, a personal finance reporter at USA Today. His story is called Millennials Want to Retire by 60. Good luck with that. The advice for some of them, if they really plan to get after it now and go for that, if it's possible, what do the pros say?
Well, I started saving in a small way for retirement when I was 23, and apparently that's really early. Millennials, to their great credit, on average start saving for retirement in their mid-20s, which is really good. Older generations, like the boomers, apparently on average waited to their mid-30s to think about saving for retirement. I'm surprised by that. But what the experts say is if you want to retire early-ish at all, like let's say 60 or earlier, that you'd have had to have basically saved consistently in a 401k or something like that for at least a quarter century, 25 years, and aggressively, like let's say maybe, I don't know, 10% of your salary. If you do that consistently for 25 years or more, at the end of those 25 years, you do apparently have a pretty good chance of being able to retire.
Yeah. Is there a chance here that in some ways these young adults are more knowledgeable than we were, given the availability of, I don't know, information or, you know, internet help, easy to learn apps or easy to operate apps?
I think that's a realistic statement. When I was 25, there wasn't much internet, and what I knew about retirement was very, very little. I think I signed up for the 401k because Knight Ridder, the media company, told me to. But younger people have access to all this social media stuff for good and ill, lots and lots of access to the same information about retirement and savings goals and budgeting that older people, I guess, used to sort of, you know, gather together over the decades. So, yeah, in theory, I think the younger, the Gen Zers and the millennials do have access to more information, but not all of it is good.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Dan Divis, personal finance reporter at USA Today. Let me introduce the sports fans to Prize Picks. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app with over 3 million active members. It's the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. On Prize Picks, it's just you against the numbers. All you do is pick more or less on 2 to 6 player stats and watch the winnings roll in. Here come the NBA and NHL playoffs, plus MLS soccer is underway, right? So maybe on a single entry, you choose LeBron James for more than 23 points, Connor McDavid for less than 3 assists, and Lionel Messi for more than 1 goal. You can now win up to 100 times your money. With as little as 4 correct picks, you can turn $10 into $1,000. Download the app today and use code DEAL for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code DEAL on PrizePicks for a deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks is really simple to play. I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. Download the app and use code DEAL for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday. Time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we as a nation are preparing for trillions of red-eyed cicadas to emerge soon. And while the bugs will mostly cause a racket and be annoying to the humans living next to them, they can also apparently be tasty to eat. A restaurant in New Orleans is preparing to round up some of the insects and serve them up. The Audubon Insectarium has long served an array of insect-based treats at its Bug Appetit Cafe overlooking the Mississippi River, including cinnamon bug crunch, chili fried wax worms, and crispy Cajun spiced crickets. And according to the AP, the Insectarium's creator showed off a few of the upcoming cicada dishes, including a salad featuring apple, almonds, blueberry vinaigrette, and roasted cicada. fried cicadas were also dressed with a warm mixture of Creole mustard and soy sauce. And in case you're wondering what the little buggers taste like, it's not chicken. They say that depending on the type and the way they're prepared, cooked cicadas taste similar to toasted seeds or nuts.
Yeah, I can believe that. I would eat that.
You would? Yeah, I was expecting you to say, hell no.
No, I would. The only real question is, like, what to pair that with?
Yeah, well, sure.
Listen, as much as I love bourbon,
uh-huh,
I don't think this is a bourbon dish.
Yeah,
I think this is a beer.
Yeah.
Maybe a white wine, you know, maybe a Chardonnay with that.
Something with a very strong taste. It's
yeah.
Get that
maybe
out of my
even
mouth.
Lighter than a Chardonnay. Maybe even like a Pinot Grigio.
Oh, okay.
Perhaps.
You're going a little bit of a different angle
think,
there.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you know, yeah.
just throwing it out there.
Yeah. I'll drink the wine.
Okay.
You eat the cicadas.
I'll eat the cicadas.
That's how we'll do this.
Okay.
And if you're flying home from the Big Easy and hoping to wash down that cicada taste with a drink on the plane, here's one way you could score one without taking out your credit card. A TikTok video by a flight attendant named Cher Kilo has gotten some attention, and she outlines what she calls king and queen behavior on flights. For starters, she loves it when people know how to store their luggage in the overhead bins, wheels first. The second thing she loves is when people check that the seatbelt sign is off and the lavatory light is green before making a dash for the bathroom. Now, some of that's personal for her because if you're standing waiting for the bathroom, your butt might be up close and personal with her face while she's sitting in the flight attendant's jump seat. And that's no fun for anyone. And the third thing, the one that might get you a freebie, pay attention during the safety briefing. She says that even if it's just for show, if you look like you're watching her and even go so far as to pull out the safety information card from the seat pocket, she says she's very likely to offer you a free drink.
Ah, come on.
That's not bad. Just pull out the card and pay attention.
I believe the kids back in the day used to call these the tryhards.
Oh, okay.
Who used to like suck up or kiss butt to try to get like the freebie here.
Yeah, so you wouldn't do that. You'd eat a cicada, you know.
Yeah,
But you wouldn't do this. You would just pull out the card and pretend like you're watching. Do you pay attention normally, or are you kind of off in your own world?
Yeah, I'm a little of both. You know, my attention span is not great to begin
with.
So it's hard.
Yeah.
That 45 seconds is very hard with the flight attendant.
Once they buckle that first seatbelt, you're kind of out. You're like, okay, I got the whole seatbelt spiel down. I'm back to my my music or whatever.
By the way, I meant to introduce you today as the Run with the Eagles 5K winner this weekend in Allentown, New Jersey, in your age group.
Yeah.
You and your son.
Yeah, we really...
Congratulations.
We killed it, let me tell you.
How about that?
Still sore today, but did better than we thought we were going to do.
The 5K winner in the house doing news today.
Yes.
Thanks, Mike.
What does the future of mobility in Michigan sound like? It's the sound of new EV charging stations at our state parks. Discover all the ways MEDC is driving next-gen mobility in Michigan at michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Glad you're with us. It's wedding season, but can you afford to attend them as a guest? NerdWallet has suggestions for handling the financial load that can lead to less struggling and more celebrating. Number one, check your finances and feelings by mapping out your year. For example, you may realize you can't swing the out-of-state bachelorette party, but you can attend the wedding. Number two, find ways to cut costs. If possible, choose a cheaper accommodation than what the couple suggested, or crash with a local connection if you have one. Split costs with the other guests by sharing a vacation rental or driving together. Pay for fewer nights by skipping that night before dinner. Number three, consider declining. If it's someone you're close with, try calling or writing a note. Thank them for the invite and consider sending maybe a gift, like having champagne delivered to the couple. 8 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Nicole Murray.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he will fight against any efforts to impose sanctions on the country's military units. This news comes amid reports that an Israeli Defense Forces battalion is facing penalties over alleged human rights violations during operations in the West Bank.
Number two.
And more from the Middle East. At least 18 people are dead, including 14 children, after Israel launched an attack on the city of Rafah. Israel has carried out near daily air raids on Rafah, where more than half of Gaza's population has sought shelter from the fighting.
Number three.
A Chicago police officer is dead after being shot and killed while heading home from work. Chicago Superintendent of Police Larry Snelling.
Another sad day. In Chicago, another sad day for the Chicago Police Department. We lost one of our own today.
No suspect has been taken into custody and a motive has not been released. Columbia University will hold classes virtually today as Jewish leaders warn of safety concerns amid tensions over pro-Palestinian protests. Reva Feinstein, a retired administrator for the school.
The whole thing breaks my heart, and especially I think the worst, horrible, most horrible thing is what's going on with these hostages, that it's 198 days today.
The university's president said school leaders will gather to discuss a way to end the safety crisis. TikTok says a bill passed by the House of Representatives that would ban the popular social media app if Chinese owner ByteDance does not divest violates free speech. The legislation moves to the Senate, where a vote could occur in the next few days. A Walmart customer in Illinois picking up a personalized cake was in for a surprise. The message written on the dessert was not expected. Video shows the cake's text read as follows: Aries baby, open parentheses, small cursive, middle of the cake, close parentheses.
Those are actually the words on the cake?
Written in icing.
Oh my goodness. Once again, artificial intelligence, not ready for prime time. Mm-hmm. That's an AI mistake right there. Thanks for being with us. A TSA employee had the retirement send-off of a lifetime. An 8-year-old Labrador retriever named Messi finished his duties as a passenger screening canine for the TSA at Reagan National Airport outside Washington, D.C., and then enjoyed a party in his honor. A press release says his favorite activity is playing with a tennis ball after a busy day sniffing for any traces of explosives at the airport. So a training aid was concealed in a large room, and Messi, along with his handler Peter, searched the room. When Messi hit on the device, he was showered with tennis balls tossed his way by the other canine handlers. Messi's end of duties occurred when his official "Do Not Pet" patch was removed from his harness, signaling the end of his life as a working dog. Messi will be adopted in his retirement by his handler, Peter, who will go on to train TSA canines professionally. 300 TSA canines are selected each year to spend 16 weeks training for the job at Joint Base San Antonio Lackland. That'll do it for this hour. For Nicole Murray and Mike Gavin, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.